Welcome, everybody, to another edition of A Cast of the Past, where usually we talk about a specific video game or movie, but every now and then we have the off-the-rails episodes where we go off-topic, catch up on other things that we've been watching and listening to, and we realize that there's a couple of movies that we hadn't had a chance to cover on the podcast, so we're going to be doing a mini movie review extravaganza, talking about Hobbs and Shaw, talking about The Lion King. And I saw this thing that Ryan also saw previously. It was on Netflix, and it's super weird, and it involves Viagra. So we'll be talking about that on A Cast of the Past. New episode every Sunday. My name is Juan Velez. I am from Puerto Rico. Keith is off saving the world, so I have with me Ryan McNulty from Boston, Massachusetts. Ryan, huh? How's the movie world going?
Movie world's going good. So I've probably mentioned a few times on the podcast that I recently got the Showcase Subscribe. So that's like the theaters like that are near me, and that's basically their version of MoviePass. So I can see three movies it's like three movies a month for like $15 a month. So it works.
How much is an average cost of a movie ticket, like aside from a subscription,
generally speaking? It's like $10.50, I think, if you go like prime time here. So if I see two movies, I'm actually already getting more than my money's worth. So there's not even that pressure. That's what I like. There's not even that pressure to have to see that third movie. But so far, I think I've only like missed the third movie once.
That's not bad.
Yeah, no, it's honestly really good, and it seems more stable than MoviePass, because I think MoviePass just started getting more restrictions, and this is just like I book three a month, and I'm good to go. There's no like anytime I want to see it, I see it. So because of that, even though I barely saw like any movies in theaters last year, I've seen so many this year. But the most recent one I just saw was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie. So I've only seen a couple Quentin Tarantino movies, like Kill Bill 1. I never even saw 2.
What would you say is his favorite, just based on the ones that you've seen?
My favorite is probably Pulp Fiction. I think overall that's just the most entertaining one. It's so memorable, so many quotes. I did really like Reservoir Dogs a lot too.
Really good movie, my favorite.
But I would say I like Pulp Fiction more. So this movie, without giving too much away, well, I won't give anything away. It is long. Much like a lot of his movies are. And it definitely really takes its time. And I'll put it this way, I didn't fully understand the historical context. So when the movie ended, I was like confused. And then when I realized that, and I'll just tell you because it makes the movie better to know the historical context, that basically the Manson family, like Charles Manson, plays that whole thing, the whole murder that happens in the 60s plays a role in this movie that I totally didn't, it did not click with me. And so once I read after, I was like, I put all the pieces together. It made so much more sense. But yeah, it's a very interesting movie. Brad Pitt, I think, steals the show. Like his character, he's basically Leonardo DiCaprio's character's stunt double. And he just carries himself like the coolest guy in the room, whichever scene he's in. So
what is the situation that's actually happening in the movie?
Yeah. So what's going on is basically Leonardo DiCaprio is playing this Hollywood or this like this TV show cowboy guy whose career is kind of on a slide, and he's trying to like reinvigorate his career. And he's got his stunt double buddy who he basically pays to also just be like his gopher, like to just go and do stuff for him. And yeah, it's about Leo just trying to make it. And then there's also his next door neighbor is like a famous director, Roman Polanski, who also did some shady shit later in his life. But he plays it's kind of a minor role of like what's going on next door to his house as well. So that's kind of the main thing, but it's the style and everything kind of takes over the film.
How's the dialogue? Because when you talk about Quentin Tarantino.
The dialogue is great. It's exactly what you would expect. But the movie, like I said, takes its time. It goes in all these places that you don't really expect. It really like meanders, and you're just kind of like, you're trying to put the pieces, you're kind of like sitting there waiting for everything to kind of come together. And it does. And the last 20 minutes of the movie, I will say, are unforgettable. I'll put it that way. I won't say anything else.
So would you recommend it to somebody that's maybe a casual Quentin Tarantino fan? Because his movies are definitely an acquired taste,
yes.
Right?
So. Yeah, if you like his other movies, then you'll want to see this one. I think most people agree, while it is a solid movie, it's definitely not his best. I don't see anyone saying it's his best. But like I said, if you're a fan of those movies, then you'll like this. If you're not a fan of his other movies, then you're probably not going to like this one anymore.
Okay, so... I probably won't watch it, but good stuff. Good stuff. Because really, I don't go to the movie theater a lot. So recently, just 2 days before this recording, I saw Hobbs and Shaw. You know, we recently talked about SummerSlam 2004. If you want to talk about wrestling, that's available in the archives. And then this movie is the evolution of everything that's been happening in the Fast and Furious movies. I won't really get into spoilers. I'll just say that if you thought that the previous Fast and Furious, Hobbs movies, like all of these different things were outrageous, they are nothing.
Oh my God.
Literally nothing.
I'm terrified.
Compared to this one.
I'm absolutely terrified. Because...
No, like, let's put it this way. You could put this movie alongside the MCU, and the MCU would sometimes seem tame in comparison.
It would seem more realistic.
I'm comparing this movie. Yes.
That terrifies me, because... The Fast franchise has a place in my heart, and I think Fast 5 is an amazing action movie, and I love the original Fast and the Furious. I even like Tokyo Drift. Dude, if you haven't seen Tokyo Drift, go back and watch it now. You'll be loving the fact that it's about cars again. Seriously, Tokyo Drift has gotten better with age because these new movies have gotten so ridiculous that you're like, oh my God, I just want to watch a movie about racing again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought the eighth one was so ridiculous, so stupid.
Oh, that's nothing, dude.
Yeah,
that's nothing.
That I saw the trailers for this and I was like, damn it, like I love The Rock, but this movie looks so stupid. But I love the franchise. I am so committed to the franchise that even though every bone in my body is telling me this is going to be the dumbest thing I've ever seen, I must see this movie. And I know I'm going to see this movie.
Yeah. So the plot of it is fairly simple. Guess what? The world may be coming to an end. There's this virus that can destroy organs. It can melt them. And there's a bad guy that wants them, right? So the bad guy is damn near a superhuman. He was actually reconstructed from the inside out. So he's somebody that can punch through walls. He can bend steel. He can stop bullets with his hands. So it's somebody that is physically incapable of being beaten without really going into spoilers. So you have Hobbs and Shaw come together. And the whole movie, here's how I pitched it to a friend. You saw the first Rush Hour, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the first Rush Hour movie, you have Chris Tucker, Jackie Chan, they're trying to like get to know each other, but it's like they dislike each other. Imagine that dynamic spread throughout the entire film. But like the first 30 minutes of Rush Hour is this entire movie. So the entire movie,
it just never stops.
It never stops. It never takes itself seriously. And in order for me to be able to laugh at something's happening on screen, you need to have those serious moments that you're like, you're like breathing just a little bit. The times that I was laughing, dude, it was because what I was seeing, my eyes could not process the things that I was seeing. There's a scene at the end of the movie that I won't spoil, that if you thought anything you had seen in the movies before was outrageous, I was verbally laughing out loud, not at how funny it was, but it just like somebody wrote that in a script and somebody's job was to digitally have that happen on screen.
All right, well, you just made me picture that a plane is shooting a nuclear missile and The Rock literally leaps in the air and grabs the missile, does a full front flip and throws it back at the plane. And that's just my imagination. Don't tell me if I'm right, but that's what I'm picturing when you say something that ridiculous.
It does involve a helicopter, and that's all I'll say with that.
Put a percentage-wise of how close I am.
You're like, I want to say 70%. So you're not that
holy
close.
Holy, 70?
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. It's worth checking out, I guess. But honestly, I wouldn't watch it maybe in the theaters. It's like, if you want to do like a marathon of like Fast and Furious movies, it's like you pick, you know, like a certain trilogy, certain sequels, like maybe that's when you check it out.
The key question, where does this take place in the Fast and the Furious timeline?
I have no freaking idea. This is like phase 10 of the Fast cinematic universe or something. I don't know where they're going with this afterwards, because clearly this movie does directly point out, hey, this is not over. Like, we are doing more than this. I don't even know what more.
But I mean, dude, you got to be pumped for the next proper Fast movie, because John Cena is going to be in it. I don't know if you knew that.
That's going to be good. Dude. That's going to be good.
If you're going to take out The Rock, I couldn't think of anyone better to put in than John Cena. Like, that just makes me, that makes me smile. That, as stupid as, they're probably going to be in space, like, fighting.
Why not?
There's some drug lord on space, apparently, selling something that they have to take him out. So, I can't wait to see John Cena in a car on space. I'm looking forward to it.
We got to review that.
Oh, yes.
Is what you're saying now. Yeah, so what else have you been watching? You saw Lion King, right?
I did see The Lion King, and I think there's like a worldwide, I don't think there's ever been more of a consensus on a movie than there is with The Lion King, right? I'm pretty sure my opinion is shared by 99% of the world, and that's essentially, there's no reason to see this movie, aside from appreciating the visual effects artists, because they did a tremendous job of making, like, these animals look real. Like, they look, this looks like the African
safari.
That's
the headline. The animals look real.
The animals look real. Once you get over that, you could forget about the rest of the movie. That, like, if you compare the, if you just look at, it's a shot-for-shot remake. So it's not like they're bringing anything new to the table. In fact, they actually cut, like, Scar's song to, like, basically 30 seconds. So you're actually getting less of, like, the musical aspect in this. I thought the voice acting, for the most part, was not that great. Obviously, Mufasa was amazing because they got James Earl Jones again. But even Donald Glover, I was a little disappointed with his older Simba, and the kid Simba just sounded annoying. I thought Beyonce was just straight up not good as as what the hell's her name? What's the girl lion's name?
I'm
Nala.
Just gonna let you
Nala.
Soak this in.
Nala.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. But anyway. It's, if you, like I said, if you look at each screen, like you look at the Disney, oh, they're both Disney, duh. But if you look at the cartoon side by side with the new movie, the colors, it's just like the Disney ones, I keep calling it the Disney
yeah,
one.
The animated ones. Well, they're both animated. Yeah, the hand drawn ones.
The hand drawn one is like beautiful and colorful. And then you
vibrant,
look,
yeah.
Yeah, very vibrant. And you look at the digital visual effects on the 3D one, and it's so bland. I mean, I know a lot of the safari is a lot of like browns and like dark greens and stuff, but I feel like they could have brightened it up a little bit. It's just because like a lot of like 90% of the movie, it feels like you're just looking at like rocks and stuff. And yeah, and obviously the biggest problem being, because they were going for that realism, the lion's faces and all the animals' faces, for the most part, they're not expressing emotion very well. And if the voice acting also is not like taking it to the next level, then it's just like, it's just doesn't have the same impact. Like, I'm going to go, obviously, I'm assuming everyone knows the story of The Lion King. There was like no emotion for the Mufasa dying scene. I'll put it that way. Like, I felt nothing. Like, I was expecting that emotional moment that made so many kids cry, basically. And
yeah,
it's
it was
just,
a big deal.
You're just like, yep, this is, you know, this is what happens in the story. The only standouts I'd say were Timon and Pumbaa, Seth Rogen. I forget the name of the other actor, but Seth Rogen did a great job. They were the most entertaining part of the movie. Other than that, you just don't need to see it. I'll put it that way.
And I think it's definitely going to make Disney think twice about
it
working these things down the line. No, no, they're still going to do that, but
they might
maybe they're not going to do like
longer.
The shot for shot thing. I think it's a great example. Once again, I haven't seen it, but it's the same reason why whenever you make a book and you turn the book into a movie, if you do it shot by shot, literally from book to screen, it's also boring because even if it matches the source material, there's no surprise element. So by just having the movie be a copy and paste, it's like, oh, well, I get to see it and now it's 3D. Cool.
But I think it's a little bit in there. It's different to me when it's a book or a video game being translated. Like, all I've ever wanted them to do with a video game movie is actually follow the damn story of the game, which they never seem to be able to
do. You're asking for too much.
Yeah. But like Harry Potter, right, is like, especially the first couple of movies are extremely faithful. And I thought that was a joy to watch. But yeah, when you already have a movie that is near perfection, that like it's about as perfect as you can get for a children's movie, why does this need to exist except for like enforcing your intellectual property so that it doesn't become public domain someday? And I think that's their true motivation. But Mulan coming out in like a year, I think I have high hopes. I know I shouldn't, but I think they're going to go a different route with it because it's not going to be a it's not going to be a musical. So I'm very curious to see what they do with that. And it's like, isn't there going to be wars? Like, how are you going to handle that as a Disney?
Yeah, that one I'm actually very excited to see because I enjoyed Mulan. And yeah, the trailer, the tone, the theme was very different. But for everybody watching and listening, please go to social media, Cast of the Past, and let us know which is your favorite remake of something that already exists in that same platform. So movie to movie, which is your favorite remake? And then before we conclude, there's a movie that I saw on Netflix, which I'm very happy that Ryan had seen this as well. Came out in 2017. It's called Gerald's Game. Oh boy, I saw this on a Friday night with my wife, with part of her family. I didn't know what to expect, and I was horribly traumatized. So to summarize the story, it's available now on Netflix. It stars Carla Gugino, I think that's how you say her last name.
Take your word
Bruce
for
Greenwood.
It.
So this is an older couple that lost the magic. You know, they've been married for multiple years, and they try to get a little kinky to spice up the marriage, right? So they coordinate this getaway weekend at a house that's completely isolated, and the sexual tension is no longer there, kind of like between me and Ryan, because we don't have Keith right now. There's no sexual tension at all.
Well done.
Just
well
threw
done.
That out of left field. Yeah. But he, in particular, wants to have some naughty things happen. So he actually gets real handcuffs, and you can tell she's physically uncomfortable, just like Ryan is right now hearing me explain
I'm
this.
Just a little hurt that the spark is gone, but continue.
Yeah, it's gone, man. We'll get it back, Ryan. We'll get it back with Keith Returns. But what happens is that he apparently can't get his ding-a-ling working. So he gets some Viagra to really try to spice things up. But as she is handcuffed, he has a heart attack and dies. So phone's out, no battery, out of reach, in a house that nobody can hear you scream. She's handcuffed to a bed, and your husband freaking dies on top of you. That is the premise of the movie. And then the rest of the movie is her having this like this internal dialogue with herself, talking with like the thought process of the husband and the things that didn't work in the marriage. Long story short, she does end up, you know, going through situations that maybe leads to a positive outcome. I don't think that's really much of a spoiler, because what do you expect in a movie like this? Let's be real. This is a movie that it's not about how it ends, but what happens in between. I think that the closure of this movie, completely irrelevant. It's the ride that happens in the middle, and damn, it's messed up. It is freaking messed up. Ryan, were you messed up watching this damn movie?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed this movie a lot more than I expected. I really knew nothing going in. My girlfriend found it and wanted us to watch it, so we watched it. So this is based on a Stephen King novel, if you didn't know. And yeah, it worked really well as a movie. I love that basically, yeah, she's stuck to the bed, and it's like, that's the whole movie. Like, her just trying to get out of this situation. I kind of like those movies where it's like, essentially, it's like one location the entire time. Almost kind of like, obviously, a very different style, but like The Breakfast Club. Most of that movie just took place in like one room as the story's developing. I kind of like when movies do something different like that. So it was really interesting how you handle that and make that interesting, where she's kind of seeing, like, she's seeing people. There's a whole situation with a dog that you're just like, oh boy. And I'll
no
say,
sexual tension there. I'm just going to clarify.
Aside from the obvious big scene, the big gross out scene that is unforgettable, that you'll never forget.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the thing that freaked me out the most is basically she gets a visitor, essentially. And I think it was that scene where it's dark and she's looking in the dark and it's like she can't tell if she's seeing something, because everyone's had that moment, right? Where it's like it's in the dark and you're laying in bed and you look kind of to the end of your room and you think you see something. And
yeah, so just before that, to give some additional context, and I think, like, let's be real, it's a movie that we're getting to kind of spoiler territory, but it's something that even if we went into detail watching it, because the whole thing of the movie, which leads up to what Ryan just mentioned, is that think about the fact that your freaking husband died on top of you. So naturally, she starts hallucinating. So it becomes this line of, is what I'm watching real or is what I'm watching fake? Like, I see a dog come in or I see a dude come in. Is that actually real? And the whole movie makes you think about that.
Yeah. And like I said, like her just looking in the dark and like thinking she sees something and then it actually is something. It just freaks you out because, like you said, you've had those moments where you think you see something in your room at night and thankfully it's not actually anything, but it definitely freaks you out. The one problem I'd say I have with the movie is, like, it kind of just goes, at the end, it's just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to explain everything now, you know, like kind of classic movie, kind of horror movie thing where it's like, you're intrigued by all the mystery. And then at the end, they're just like, blah, blah, blah. Let me just verbally diarrhea the whole end of the movie. You know, that was my only problem with it. But other than that, it's still 100% worth watching.
Yeah. And I come from a production background. Like, my bachelor's degree is in film. And I feel like this is the type of movie that, once again, it's not about the beginning, the middle, and the end, but purely the acting. Bruce Greenwood, holy crap. I mean, this guy's an acting machine. So he's the person that plays the husband. So
I've seen him in a lot of stuff recently.
Yeah, yeah. And he plays that role of, like, the bad guy. Not the bad guy that you hate, but you know he's a bad person, yet you're fascinated by what he's saying. You're captivated by his words. And he has a doozy of a couple of monologues in this movie that just straight up, close up, no cuts. And I think that this is like an acting 101, because what happens, like what you mentioned, the entire movie takes place in basically one place. So if the actors don't deliver the performance, it's going to be a cluster, right? Yet, I don't think it's a movie for everybody. Definitely don't do like what I did and watch it on a Friday night with the family. This is like, if you're feeling good and you can take a couple of hits, then watch this movie. If you're not feeling great, you know what? Maybe check out literally any other movie on Netflix other than this one. But I think that's going to be doing it for this Off the Rails episode. Keith will be back as we review eventually Spider-Man 2. You know, this is a really good chance to catch up. That's why we like to do these in-between episodes, because right now we are playing through The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening on the Game Boy Color. Ryan brought this up on the previous episode. We're going to be reviewing that on the road to the version on the Nintendo Switch, which we'll touch up on. We won't do a full review maybe, but we'll definitely do like a comparison, especially Ryan being such a fan of The Legend of Zelda. And if you like that, you know, we do have The Legend of Zelda tier list episode, which is basically Ryan taking over the damn episode.
I rank every game.
Yeah, and we built an N64 classic. I like these episodes that we construct everything inside of it, because honestly, I think it's a lot more fun than just showing like a clean, finalized product. You get to see the gritty conversations that usually happen.
You get to see us hash it out and think about, and you get more of the reason why we're putting things in a list or whatever.
Exactly. So if you enjoy these episodes, please consider leaving that 5-star review, whether it be on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, even on Facebook, you can leave a review. I do suggest that you follow our Instagram account, actually. We're doing something a little different there, because we always mention that it's impossible to cover every game and movie that we like. So something that we started doing is these 1 minute review slash impression things. Like Ryan has a 1 minute thing talking about Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I have one talking about some of my favorite wrestling games and things like that. So a cast of the past on Instagram. So not only is it about clips of the podcast, you actually get some exclusive content, people. So if you want to hear us talk about other things that maybe that leads to a full length episode, check it out right there on Instagram. So up until next time, thank you for watching and listening, and we will be back with another exciting episode of A Cast
to the
Past. Let's do this together right now. Let's do this together. At three, two, one, and then we'll say past. Okay. Three, and like in a harmonic sound. We got to sound pretty. Yeah. We talked about a gritty ass movie to close off the show. So three, two, one.
Wow. I was going for a higher tone.
Yeah. We suck at this. Take care, everybody.